and Marotta.
Let's start the show.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Dan Bickley, Vince Marotta.
Bickley and Marotta.
A tremendous Friday to all you Valley sports fans. I'm Dan Bickley. That is Vince Marotta. I have no idea how we are going to top the Doug and Wolf show after they had Phil Anselmo from Pantera on, Vinny.
We can do it.
Let's start.
Are you talking to me?
No, I'm talking to Jarrett. Hit it, Jarrett.
The Splash. Splash. The stories making waves in the sports world. The Splash.
Cannonball coming.
All right, story number one for everybody who thought Josh Rosen was too rich and disinterested to care about an NFL career. Well, that perception keeps getting exposed as myth, maybe even slander. Josh Rosen, reports are that he did not want to attend an NFL rookie premiere so he could stay here and practice football.
This whole story is strange to me. And Kent Summers had it on AZ Central today, why Josh Rosen didn't practice on Thursday. Now, those practices aren't open for most of the time. We were out there. We didn't get wind of him not practicing. But they have this rookie premiere where sponsors and marketing people get to invite the rookies of choice to this weekend at this luxury hotel. Josh Rosen didn't want to go.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to go, but if he doesn't go,
he can't practice. Yeah. Right.
It's in the CBA. This is a stupid rule. How do you penalize somebody for wanting to keep working?
Come on. The guy wants
to penalize the team for
a player
that wants
to work. The guy wants to be the starting quarterback from week one of the season, man. Let him have his shot.
That's a dumb rule.
Yeah, if nothing else, perceptually, it's a story that helps Josh Rosen, no doubt. Item number two, the Arizona Diamondbacks on the road to start a nine-game road trip that ends, right around Memorial Day. Vinny laid it out very well yesterday. It's an important road trip, not just for a struggling baseball team, but if they can't get their offense together away from Chase Field, what are we really going to grasp onto after that?
Yeah, I mean, these three games in New York are probably not the best gauge of whether or not, if the Diamondbacks produce, it's a really good sign because you're playing in a pitcher's ballpark against two really good pitchers tonight in DeGrom, and then Sunday they get Syndergaard. So if they can turn it around against those two guys in that environment, that's a good sign moving forward. But I'm not the concern is growing, definitely, but I'm not at panic mode yet on the offense, even though the D-backs have the worst team batting average in baseball.
Yeah, no doubt about it. There's a side story with it that I wrote on arizonasports.com, and that is the Diamondbacks, unbeknownst to us in spring training, are blessed to be playing in a division full of teams that really aren't looking all that formidable. Okay, so that's to their benefit. But now we're talking about the competition here in Arizona. The drafting of Josh Rosen, the winning of the NBA draft lottery, has sort of made the conversation around water coolers all about our NFL franchise and our NBA franchise. So once again, it is this battle for market viability, market attention, market share that the Diamondbacks have to counter.
It is strange how quickly it's shifted. I mean, 2 weeks ago, you're talking about the Diamondbacks, and remember when we did our show out there for the last half-day club against the Dodgers, and there was just a buzz. Like, everybody wanted to be a part of the Diamondbacks, and their recent play has turned some people off. We'll get more into that later on. I want to call an audible on the Splash today.
Oh, good.
Because Ian Rappaport of NFL Network is reporting the Cardinals are finalizing a trade for Browns starting cornerback Jamar Taylor. Rappaport tweets, corner is a big need for Arizona, and Taylor fills it. Cleveland had shopped him during the draft, and the two sides kept talking. Trade is expected to happen after 4 p.m. today. If you're wondering about Jamar Taylor, 5'11", 192, came out of Boise State. He's 27 years old. Last year, in 15 starts, 16 games for the Browns, he had 10 pass breakups, didn't have an interception, but also had three interceptions in 2016, started his career with the Miami Dolphins. So area of need, and it looks like the Cardinals are addressing it through this trade.
Okay. Not a bad player. Probably doesn't bringing a lot of optimism when he's coming from Cleveland. I guess this would also tell you that Bashaud Breeland is not all that.
Yeah, he came in for his visit and left without. So maybe Breeland, who has been listed as one of the top free agents still available, ends up with the Colts, as people have speculated. But we'll see what happens there.
Okay, well, that's, you know, you can't. That's one of those missing pieces the Cardinals had to add. We'll get into that as we go on. But at least they're adding depth to that position. I suppose that's a good thing, Vinny. All right, the NBA draft lottery. Here's a question that I don't think anybody really can wrap their head around. But is there anyone other than DeAndre Ayton and Luka Doncic that the Suns should consider with the number one pick in the draft?
Definitely.
Huh?
Marvin Bagley III?
What?
When you have the top pick, you have to do your diligence, man.
All right.
It's like the Suns going through their coaching search.
Yeah.
They didn't narrow in on one candidate. They interviewed a lot of people. And if you listen to these players that are going to be at the top of the draft, there's a lot of them that believe they're going to be number one. Michael Porter Jr. believes he's the best player in the draft. He may be. He played 53 minutes his last season in Missouri.
All right, so let me guess.
Mohamed Bamba feels he should be the number one player in the draft.
Because of a wingspan. So both those guys after the draft are going to go, three mistakes. I'm proving them all wrong. I'm proving them all wrong.
The difference between the coaching search and the draft is that the Suns can actually get their number one choice in the draft.
That is true.
Oh, is that how that works, Jarrett? With the...
I hope in the next 5 weeks we don't report like DeAndre Ayton has informed the Suns that he's pulling out of consideration for the number one pick.
Oh, my goodness.
Just joking.
All right, there
finally,
you go.
NBA playoffs continue after a layoff tonight. No games again tonight. Saturday and Sunday they'll pick up. Game 3 in the Eastern Conference Finals tomorrow in Cleveland. Celtics leading the Cavs 2-0. And then Sunday we'll get the continuation of the Western Conference Finals. Rockets in Oakland to take on Golden State. That series knotted up at 1 apiece.
Yeah, and the big story is going to be this Game 3 in Cleveland. What will LeBron James bring? Can the Cavaliers make a last stand here? Because the closer they get to extinction and elimination, Vinny, the more the where is LeBron going narrative is going to continue to rise in prominence.
There you go.
There you go.
That's our splash.
That is. All right, so Jarrett, before we move on today, if the morning show could get Phil Anselmo, former singer of Pantera, to come on and listen to Wolfley's Pantera call out. Look, Robert Plant, Angus Young, seriously?
Get on that.
Come on, dude. Come on, they've thrown down the gauntlet.
You got it.
Now, Vinny has already interviewed
the Depeche Mode guy.
Twice.
The Depeche Mode guy.
Who's a big New York Knicks fan.
Larry Depeche.
He is a big New York Knicks fan.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Lives in New York now.
Uh-huh. And how did you handle that interview? Were you good? Or was it like Stephanie Hockeridge all over again? Were you going to the air conditioner?
It was like Stephanie Hockeridge times 1,000. I don't know if I've told this story before, but he was coming through town. This was years ago. Mm-hmm. He had a solo project, and he was coming through town, and I told my producer, you got to book this guy. You got to get him on.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, he ended up getting him. But he was doing it before his show the night before his Phoenix show, so I think he was in San Diego. So he called in at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So I had to go back into the radio station to record it. So I'm waiting for him to call. And finally, you know, he calls. And one of the workers at the station comes out and says, I was in this holding area outside the studio. And one of the workers comes out and says, hey, Vince, Dave Gahan from Depeche Mode's on the phone for you. And I was like, so I walk in. And I'm like, be cool. So I'm picking up the phone just to let him know we're getting set up and it'll be a couple minutes. So I pick up the phone and it sounded like, hello.
You're like that quarterback whose voice cracks when he comes in the huddle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-oh. Need a timeout, young man?
So I put him back on hold, and he's thinking, this guy has no command of the huddle at all. I have no respect for him.
Yeah. There you go. So can we, like, shoot his sights a little higher? Really? I mean, we've got to top that, don't we, at some point in time? No? But
did they have we do have a musical connection with the show. I mean, you're just unwavering love and support of Zeppelin and AC/DC.
Yeah.
So maybe it's possible. Look, Brian Johnson is you can get him now, right?
He's
not part of the band.
I actually know a guy who's got his phone number. I do. Right. We could get him in. Right. I'm into it.
And before we move on to actual topics of the day,
yeah,
we have a daily what do you hear dilemma that is captivating the internet again. At first, it was Yanni or Laurel. We've covered that one. There's a new one today. Brainstorm or Green Needle. Have you seen this one?
No.
Jarrett, go ahead. Hit it. All right, I've listened to that probably 30 times now. Yeah. I have not heard anything close to Brainstorm on this
That's
one.
That's all I hear.
That's all you hear is
That's
Brainstorm?
That's all I hear is Brainstorm.
I hear Green Needle every time.
That's
There's
funny.
A different number of syllables.
That's funny.
How could
all
these...
I hear is Brainstorm.
That's crazy. What do you hear, Jake? See, okay, pause it for a sec. They say... that if you go into, if you set your mind expecting to hear the word brainstorm, you'll hear brainstorm and the opposite for green needle.
Yeah.
I've even tried to train myself. All right, brainstorm's coming and I still hear green needle.
Yeah. Okay. I don't. First of all, this one, that audio quality is terrible. So, I don't even think this even rises to the Yanni Laurel debate. Seriously. Okay, you know, this is just stupid where this thing is going.
Are we going to have a debate like this every day?
No,
what do you hear?
Yeah, what do you hear?
What do you hear, Jarrett?
I heard Green Needle the first time through that you played it.
Yeah.
And then when you told me the Brainstorm thing, I thought Brainstorm, and now I only hear Brainstorm.
Yeah, well, that is what they call, that's a psychological technique, Jarrett, just, you know, called priming, where you prime your brain to hear what you want to or are supposed to hear, and then boom, you do.
I wonder if this is all related to, like, the priming thing. Has anybody ever attempted to hypnotize you, like a professional hypnotist?
Yes.
Are you able to be hypnotized?
When I was in high school, I am not.
I used to laugh about it,
I actually was hypnotized.
Really?
For a brief moment. Yeah. It was really weird. All right. Welcome to Sigmund Freud Hour, ladies and gentlemen.
Real quick, what I just posted, look at this screen there. What do you read there? Yanni or Laurel?
I can see both.
I can see both, too.
That's pretty funny.
Somebody,
yeah,
that is pretty good.
Pretty clever.
Now it's what do you see instead of what do you hear?
Yeah. All right.
All these people just trying to create conflict in our country. It's just got to stop.
How's this for a segue? What you didn't see at Cardinals practice yesterday.
Oh, man.
Wasn't that good? Was Josh Rosen.
Maestro.
Rookie quarterback, whom is part of this weird thing called the rookie premiere, where, as you stated, rookies in the NFL are granted permission to leave their teams, to go to Beverly Hills, to hang out with NFL sponsors and potential sponsors, and just kind of, I don't know, shake hands, schmooze. And Josh Rosen literally said, I do not want to go, which is his right. But the CBA is really weird in this, where the interpretation is, okay, fine, you don't have to go, but you can't stay in practice, which really is bizarre to me because, well, I guess it's not. Because if rookies were allowed to stay in practice, then teams could kind of do the wink, wink, hey, do you really want to go to that premiere? You could really work on your five-step drop. You know what I mean? So maybe it's because they don't want teams doing the wink, wink pressure on guys to stay, so they just don't let them anywhere near the building.
Well, I misspoke earlier, and I said it's in the CBA. It's not actually in the CBA, but there's a side agreement, according to Kent Summers' article on AZ Central, between the union and the NFL that covers the matter. I just think this is ridiculous. And I know it's really hard for an event like this to take place, but couldn't it take place before OTAs start or minicamp start? There was some time. There was several days in between.
It's a great point.
Where they could wedge it in, where you're not infringing on a team's ability to coach up a player that needs coaching. Now, one practice, is it a big deal? No. Does it help you down the road? Maybe, but you're penalizing a guy that wants to stay and work.
That's right.
Which I think is just a bad precedent
to set. It's really moronic when you think about it, but I guess when you get away from it, the bigger story is that Josh Rosen wants to keep playing football. And I think it says two things, Vinny. One, it's a real powerful response to all those haters who thought Josh Rosen was too rich and too distracted to really give it all to football. Now, his head coach at UCLA did not help that perception. When he came out and said, look, if Josh ever really applies himself to football, he'll set the world on fire. And he kind of painted this picture, what, like a millennial or a young kid who was just too distracted by life and various interests to be that I'm fully embedded into football. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. So he's kind of countered that perception with this. And I think this is a really powerful statement for him to make. But locally, it sort of enhances this this image that Josh Rosen might be really making a run for this job right here and now, which is exciting. It's not what we expected. And it, to this point, we don't even know if it's something the Cardinals coaching staff would entertain. And let me ask you this. If you've sunk that money into Sam Bradford, at least what he's going to get in year one.
$15 million of it's guaranteed, correct?
Should that, I think I know the answer to that. Will that influence the decision?
Maybe at the beginning of the year. I can understand, regardless of quarterback situation, Bick, an NFL team going into this, let's say training camp. You've got a veteran that you have brought in via free agency. You've got a rookie that you've invested a top 10 pick in. I can see why a team would be hesitant to say, all right, you're our guy from day one under those circumstances. But Josh Rosen has, in a very short time, impressed a lot of people. Now, is it too early to tell what kind of quarterback he's going to be? Absolutely. But you can see already the groundwork being laid. We talked to Justin Pugh yesterday when we were out at the Cardinals OTAs. And I can't say I know Justin Pugh very well. We had a good talk with him. He seems like a great guy.
Yep.
And he's going to be in demand on the radio in Phoenix while he's here. But he doesn't really, I don't think of him as a BSer. I think he's going to say what's on his mind. And he talked about already being impressed with what he's seen from Josh Rosen.
You would have been able to tell if I was sugarcoating it when I said what I said. If you know, I didn't think he had command of the huddle a lot. I've been around Eli Manning, who I think is probably one of the best composed, doesn't go up, doesn't get too high, doesn't get too low, comes in the huddle, knows what he has to do. For a guy that's been here for like a week, what's he been here, 6 days?
Yeah, like 5 minutes, yeah.
Exactly. He came in there and took control of the huddle, and that was the thing I was most impressed with. Right now, I'm not caring about if he's getting us in the right protections. It's the respect that I have for him, and I've gained from him from that first time he came into the huddle and spoke to us.
That's awesome.
That's great.
And that's something that, as a rookie quarterback, you don't see often.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
This early on.
No, it is. And I think,
and then this rule says, hey, you know what? All that progress you made in your first 6 days as a pro, put that on hold.
And I think that there is something to be said for, in this situation and others, I doubt you're going to ever hear veterans go, I don't know, kid's kind of struggling. Sean McDermott in Buffalo recently said the same thing about Josh Allen, that he's got great command of the offense already. Until these guys...
Have you seen the Bills play? I have great command of the offense.
Yeah, but I think some of this... I think it's real easy for guys to kind of verbalize stuff like this, but I do believe it's different in the case of Josh Rosen. Well, I do believe he's smart enough to make that kind of difference.
Sure, his teammates would say that, but did you hear what ESPN's Lewis Reddick, who he compared Josh Rosen to?
Tom Brady is who Josh Rosen
all right, that's
is
your
the
fault.
One is the one who I'm going to compare him to. Why? Because look, this guy is smooth in the pocket, very smooth, very subtle movement patterns in the pocket, but then a very smooth delivery. A guy who can work the middle of the field as good as anyone. Where does Tom Brady kill you? He kills you in the middle of the field. Tom Brady can kill you with the deep ball too. Josh Rosen's deep ball is getting better and better. Josh Rosen's going to wind up being the Arizona Cardinals starter week one. I'm not saying he's going to have Tom Brady's career, but he sure does look like him in terms of movement pattern.
Hear that? Buried in the middle?
Oh, I did.
Josh Rosen's going to end up being the Cardinals starter week one.
In week one. He's not the only guy to say that. There have been a lot of people who've jumped on this train, and you really have to step back and realize how odd that is. Now, is the situation such where it could happen in Arizona? Yeah, maybe, but I think everybody all assumed it was going to be all tied to Sam Bradford's health status. For Sam Bradford to get beat out by Josh Rosen in a head-to-head competition, now that would be not only an upset, that would be an unbelievable development. It would also it would also require this current coaching staff, this new coaching staff, to really kind of think creatively and think outside the box and not go, okay, you know what? Nope, there's a hierarchy here. There's a time to pay your dues, and you really need to just watch a little bit. There are so many theories on the best way to groom a starting quarterback.
Because so many guys have had success different ways.
Oh, I know. I know. There have been people who say it's good to let the kid come in and play early and then sit him to process everything he saw. There are people who think just let him sit for an entire year. I think it's all on the individual, and it's all about the fit. It's all about the situation, the circumstance, all that kind of stuff. I will say this, though. After talking to Justin Pugh and Andre Smith and watching this offensive line, I feel a little bit better about this offensive line than I thought I might.
Steve Wilkes' comments earlier in the week about this being the strength of the team. If you feel that good about your offensive line, does that sway the coaching staff too? Because it's really foolish. We can all agree it's really foolish to invest a first-round pick at quarterback and then throw him behind a shoddy offensive line that's going to get a beat up over the course of 16 games or less because of injury. No, David Carr is the perfect example. An expansion team, number one overall pick, he got the stuffing beat out of him.
Yep.
Same thing with Tim Couch, and people will call both of those guys busts. I don't think they got a fair shot. Now, they have turned out to be busts, even behind good offensive lines. But if the Cardinals coaching staff is that confident in this revamped offensive line, maybe that sways their thinking, too. If Josh Rosen is off the charts impressive for the rest of OTAs and minicamps and then into training camp, that does influence. And your offensive line looks like it's shored up, definitely.
You could say the same thing about Blaine Gabbert. He encountered the same thing in Jacksonville,
yes.
Getting thrown out there too early, getting destroyed, starts to lose confidence, and then now you're chasing your whole career from day one. And that's not good, but Josh Rosen seems a lot different in that regard. So,
can you throw Matt Leinart into that mix too?
You could. You think Matt Leinart would want to turn down a premiere at Beverly Hills? I don't.
Is there a hot tub? The other Cardinals news, we mentioned it during the splash too. Ian Rappaport reporting the Cardinals finalizing a trade with the Cleveland Browns for starting cornerback Jamar Taylor. Taylor has been a starter the last 2 years in Cleveland. Veteran, 27 years old, obviously an area of need for the Cardinals. They brought in Bashaud Breeland for a visit. He left town without a contract, so they go this way. Rappaport reported that they started talking during the draft and have kept discussion open. That's one of the check marks you had or items on the checklist you had going into this this season for the Cardinals is who's going to start. Right now it looked like it was going to be Brandon Williams. Now, worst case scenario is they've improved their depth at cornerback opposite of Patrick Peterson.
Right.
Not a bad place to be.
Well, and count me among the people who are a little bit suspicious about all the Brandon Williams optimism about whatever he did during the offseason. Jamar Taylor, from what I can tell, he's a good player. He's certainly not a shutdown corner, but he's a good player, and it's a need that they had. So I've got no issues with this at all.
No. And we'll keep our eyes on that to see all the details coming out on Ian Rappaport's report. Join ASU head football coach Herm Edwards along with U of A's all-time winningest football coach Dick Tomey on Monday, June 11th for the Positive Impact Awards at Talking Stick Resort Arena. This special luncheon honors 10 high school student-athletes who will be awarded with college scholarships from the Positive Coaching Alliance. You can get complete details and reserve your table on the events page at arizonasports.com. Coming up, still in the basking in the glow of the Suns winning the draft lottery leading up to the draft, all eyes are on Phoenix. What are they going to do with number one? We'll get the viewpoint of their beat writer from AZ Central Sports, Scott Bordeaux, next. Bickley and Murata live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. The Friday edition of Bickley and Murata here at 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. It's an exciting time to be a fan of the Phoenix Suns. How long has it been since we said that?
It's been a while.
It's been a while. They win the draft lottery. They've got the number one overall pick. Now the evaluation kicks into high gear who that pick will be. They won the draft lottery in Chicago, the NBA draft combine going on in Chicago, and joining us from the Windy City on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line from AZ Central Sports, Scott Bordeaux, our guest. Hey, Scott, how are you?
Hey, guys, how you doing?
Good. What was your impression of day one of the combine? Exciting stuff, right?
It's a bit of a zoo. I mean, there are, you know, it's interesting here. They have this media workroom, and then they bring the players in for interviews all throughout the day, and the players sit at these really, really small tables. And you guys know, if you cover any bowl games, and Dan has a lot, they have podiums where the players are at. Mm-hmm. Well, here they have these very small tables, and any of the star players get surrounded by about 40 media immediately. So it's a complete zoo. But everybody and anybody from the NBA is here. I mean, any executive, coach, GM you want to talk to, they're all here and available. So it's kind of a cool place to be for the week.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, obviously, since winning the draft lottery, everybody in Phoenix has begun debating, talking about DeAndre Ayton, Luka Doncic. You were able to sit down with Ryan McDonough yesterday and have and get some early thoughts. Can you share those with us, Scott?
Yeah, you know, I asked Ryan for a scouting report on both guys, and, you know, he let's start with Doncic. He thinks Doncic is going to be a really good player in this league. Talked about his ability to see the court, his passing vision, you know, and how big he is, and that'll surprise a lot of people. He says physically he's like Joe Johnson, who is, as you guys know, is a really sturdy, thick, muscular player, and I think there's a perception out there that Doncic isn't that big, but he's, you know, 6'8", 220, and really well built. He thinks he fits perfectly in today's NBA, where he can, you know, play multiple positions, handle the ball, defend a couple positions, so he really likes Doncic. But he also described DeAndre Ayton as a guy who just has, I'm trying to think of the words he used, just an absolute beast as a physical specimen. Can do so many things offensively for a big man, run the floor. I think Ryan thinks that he's a guy that can come in and immediately go 18-10 his first year with a couple blocks a game. I don't know which way they're going to go. I don't think they've made a decision yet, but just based on a lot of my conversations here, on and off the record, I'd be really surprised if Ayton wasn't the pick at this point. Now, that can change in the next 5 weeks,
yeah,
but that's just what I believe now.
Scott, going back to Doncic, he made some news with his comments yesterday heading into the EuroLeague semifinals this weekend that he doesn't know if it's going to be his last two games over in Europe. Everybody kind of took that as a perceived slight to the Sacramento Kings, who have the number two overall pick. Bick and I kind of debated it yesterday. I saw Ryan McDonough's quotes, and he kind of softened the quotes, or at least his interpretation softened maybe what Luka Doncic said. What do those quotes tell you? What did you think when you read what Luka Doncic said?
Well, his agent came out today, Bill Duffy, and said that had nothing to do with Sacramento. And, you know, he kind of reiterated what Ryan McDonough said, that you know, that Luka just does not want to be talking about the NBA while he's in the Final Four of the EuroLeague right now and with games this weekend. Now, when Ryan said that to me, I said to him, well, why couldn't he have just said, I don't want to talk about the NBA right now? You know, right. He didn't say that. He said, well, these might not be my two final games, but we are talking about a 19-year-old kid. Maybe didn't say it the right way. There is a perception here at the Combine that this is leverage because he doesn't want to go to Sacramento. I don't know if Ryan believes that. I don't know if I believe that. I just find it hard to believe he wouldn't come out. He's going to be a top two, at the worst, a top three pick. Mm-hmm. You can't guarantee even next year what city you're going to go to, so why would you wait?
Yeah, that's well said. Now, I'm curious, from your vantage point, now, being at the NBA Combine, and like you said, it's kind of a zoo, and it's not as big as the NBA or the NFL Combine, clearly. But in your opinion, what can conceivably happen in the next 4 weeks that might change this narrative? I know Luka Doncic playing in the EuroLeague Final Four this weekend, if he owns that thing, maybe that lifts him a little bit. But how much deviation in conventional thought do you think can happen in the next 4 weeks?
Hey, could you say, I'm sorry, say the last part again, you were just breaking up.
Yeah, how much can change in terms of these personal narratives of these players in the next 4 weeks? Because that's one of the hallmarks of the NFL draft. Everything seems to change and opinions seem to get tweaked along the way. What can we expect in the next 4 weeks in terms of these two guys?
Yeah, I don't know if a whole lot is going to change. I think the only way it would change for Luka, and Ryan McDonough mentioned this to me yesterday, if he goes out and just dominates the next two games and just looks so good in this Final Four in the EuroLeague, and as he continues in the next month playing in Europe, if he just looks like a guy that's going to be a superstar in this league, maybe you vault him to number one. I don't know if there's anything DeAndre Ayton can do to diminish his draft status, unless he just comes off as an absolute jerk in private interviews with teams. And from everything I've been told, that's not who he is, that he's a really good kid, a funny kid who's going to come across really well. I can't imagine he's going to diminish his draft status. I think the one guy whose narrative could change a little bit might be Mohamed Bamba, the center from Texas. I mean, he measured in here with a wingspan of 7'10", which is the largest in NBA history. If he can come into workouts, and everybody knows he's going to be a defensive presence around the rim, kind of a Rudy Gobert type, where he can block three or four shots a game and alter a lot of others. But if he can come in and prove that he can also shoot the three-pointer and be effective in terms of spacing the floor, maybe he elevates his draft status where he moves into the top two. You know, when I asked Ryan McDonough about Ayton and Doncic yesterday, he made sure to specifically mention that guys like, you know, Marvin Bagley III and Mohamed Bamba were going to be in consideration for the number one pick. Now, I don't know if I believe that, but could that perception change in the next 5 weeks if say, Bamba really impresses in workouts? Possibly.
Scott Bordeaux, AZ Central Sports, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Going back to Tuesday, Scott, the actual experience of the draft lottery, you know, the Suns had their party. It was bedlam down there. There was a lot of really happy people throwing confetti when they won. I know you had a different experience with it. Tell us what your experience with the lottery was this year, because I'm kind of fascinated by the whole process.
Well, you know, the lottery everybody sees on TV isn't the real lottery.
Yeah.
That's just the results of the lottery. The lottery takes place about 90 minutes earlier in a much smaller room that this year was two floors above where the televised lottery took place. And I was one of nine reporters allowed behind the scenes to watch the actual lottery take place. And there's none of the pomp and circumstance. There's no commercial breaks. The whole thing takes about 10 minutes. And when you go into the room, the NBA confiscates all your electronic equipment. They took my phone. If you have an Apple Watch, they'll take that, because once you're sequestered in that room, you cannot get out until the results are announced on TV. Because, you know, I knew that Phoenix had the number one pick about an hour before anybody else in the Valley did. And the last thing they want is me bursting from that room and tweeting on my phone. So, you know, it takes about 10 minutes, and then you just sit in that room waiting for the televised lottery portion to take place. For me, it was interminable because, you know, I know the Suns have the number one pick. I want to get in my phone. I want to tweet. I want to write a story. I need to call my bosses. There's a million things for me to do. I can't do any of it because I'm stuck in that room. So it was kind of a really interesting experience.
Wow. That's cool. All right. From your vantage point, Scott, and we've talked about this a lot on air, obviously, but tell us your perspective on how winning that draft lottery has sort of reinvigorated a fan base that has come to feel persecuted and come to feel that luck never has turned their way in the past.
Well, I mean, I think, and I don't know if, you know, could this be a metaphorical turning point for the franchise? I think in some ways it is. I mean, because, look, Suns fans have been waiting for this day for a long time. And for the last 3 years, especially when the Suns have begun this rebuild and been tanking, this has been the day they've been waiting for, a chance to get the number one pick and to draft a franchise player. And now that time is here. So, you know, and there are two potentially franchise players, maybe more, in this draft. So, yeah, I think this can be a turning point for the franchise, both in terms of perception among fans in the Valley and then, more importantly, results on the court. I mean, let's say they draft DeAndre Ayton and he's the monster in the post that everybody thinks he's going to be. You know, how good is this team going to be going forward with Ayton, Booker, and Josh Jackson as your big three? I mean, you know, every great team needs three elite players, and the Suns, if Ayton pans out and Jackson looked pretty good the second half of his first year, the Suns can say that they have their big three. So I think right now it is a turning point in terms of perception, mm-hmm. and if Ayton, Doncic, or somebody else really pans out as the number one point, a turning point in terms of the results on the court the next few years.
All right, Scott, really important question before we let you go. In that time that you were sequestered in that room before the televised portion of the lottery, does the league just they spring for a good food and drink spread? I mean, how do they keep you busy there?
Yeah, they did have food and drink, but I had eaten beforehand, so I didn't partake in that. But that's what Jim Pittman was there from the Suns, the executive vice president, and he and I just shot the breeze while he ate some pasta. I mean, that's all you do. You just sit and wait. It's just, it's the weirdest thing because the lottery's done. You know the picks, and you literally cannot leave, and there's not a whole lot to do in there. So you just sit and shoot the breeze with executives and wait for the doors to open again in an hour.
Yeah, remember, it's all about the show. It's all about the TV. They control everything. Scott, thanks for the time and the insight. Really appreciate it.
Anytime, guys.
All right, Scott Bordeaux, AZ Central Sports, beat writer for the Phoenix Suns, joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. That's CoulterTempe.com, Coulter on Camelback.com, and CoulterNissan.com. Coming up, lots of questions about the Cardinals and their quality of offensive weapons. We'll tell you where they rank on one national list next. Bickley and Murata live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Friday edition of Bickley and Murata. Thanks again to Scott Bordeaux for joining us from Chicago to give us insights on the week he's had with the draft lottery and the combine going on. And, Mohamed Bamba was the story of the combine. Real quick before we move on, 7 foot 10-inch wingspan.
Yeah.
Highest ever recorded, beating the record set by Rudy Gobert. Keep going back to that Jazz comparison that I had. The Suns can maybe, I'm not saying go for Bamba, but man.
He's a shot-blocking machine.
He had 20 games in his 1 year of college basketball at Texas with four or more block shots.
Huh.
Average 3.7, which is a really high number.
Yeah.
I don't know. Just thinking.
Well, can you afford to draft someone with no offense, though, like that? That high?
It's a great question. Depends on what you want to accomplish, who you want to put around him. Anyhow, the Cardinals off of OTAs. They'll resume OTAs next week out at the Tempe training facility. We'll be out there again for three more days to give you exclusive coverage. And the Taylor deal, the details are coming out on that. Now, you said, Jared, in my ear during the commercial break, and I haven't seen it yet, but a 2020 sixth-round pick
from the Cardinals to several different people.
Wow. You can get a starting cornerback for a sixth-round pick 2 years off?
No, I know.
That's not bad.
No, not at all. There was a time when he came out of Boise that he was once listed among the top five cornerbacks in the 2013 draft. Mm-hmm. So coming into the draft, people really liked Jamar Taylor. Apparently, he had some issues. He had a kidney issue. He wondered if he was ever going to play football again. He made his way to Cleveland. Cleveland completely revamped their whole cornerback, their secondary, obviously, after drafting Denzel Ward. And boom, now this guy was available. And if that price is accurate, that's another really good deal, you know?
In terms of offensive weapons, that's been kind of a question about the Cardinals. Certainly was last year when their offense really sputtered at times. Injuries were an issue. You don't have David Johnson for 15 of 16 games. That's a gigantic issue. The receivers didn't step up. Quarterbacks were injured, all that. Going into this year, David Johnson is back. The Cardinals have a new quarterback room. Larry Fitzgerald coming back for another season. So when you talk about weapons, when it comes to triplets is the term they use in the NFL. Quarterback, running back, wide receiver, where do the Cardinals rank? And before you compare them and hold them up against other teams, how do you feel about the triplet combination of Sam Bradford, David Johnson, and Larry Fitzgerald?
I like it. I like it. I think it's good. I wouldn't say top five NFL because of Sam Bradford.
But I wouldn't either. But
good, yes. Good.
I look at it. All right, Sam Bradford is, at this point, passable. We don't know how he's going to perform. He's been great in the past. He's been not so good in the past. David Johnson could be the best running back in football. Larry Fitzgerald, as we talked about yesterday, might be the best receiver ever to play the game when he's all said and done.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like pretty lofty status, right?
Yeah, an MVP candidate and a number one or number two wide receiver of all time. Yeah, that's pretty good stuff.
Ryan Wilson of CBS Sports went through all 32 teams with their triplet combinations, and he ranked the Cardinals threesome of Bradford, Johnson, and Fitzgerald 21st. Out of 32 teams. He writes, Bradford is the reason the cliche, the backup is only a play away from becoming a starter, exists. Injuries have plagued him throughout his career, but when he's been healthy, he's been very good. The problem is that he's played 16 games exactly once in eight NFL seasons, and he missed all of 2014 with an ACL injury. Johnson, meanwhile, was one of the league's best young backs before a broken wrist ended his 2017 campaign after just one game. The hope is that he can return to his 2016 form when he had 1,239 yards rushing, added another 879 receiving, and totaled 20 touchdowns. Fitzgerald's a first-ballot Hall of Famer, but he'll also be 35 next season. That said, he tied a career high with 109 receptions in 2017. When you consider maybe there's more doubt outside of Arizona on David Johnson, I have no doubt that when he's healthy, he's going to be a machine.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's more doubt outside of Arizona on, if you look at numbers with Larry Fitzgerald, are you going to pay more attention to the age number or the production number? I'm siding towards production.
Yeah.
So I think 21's actually a little bit low.
And aren't we seeing all across sports that age, the concept of age and what's old and what's past your prime, isn't that changing across the board?
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen so many examples of it from Bartolo.
It's like
Cologne.
I always say, like in sports radio, 46 is the new 20.
That's right. Roger Federer. There's all of these examples of guys now pushing the age envelope to levels that it hasn't been before. So, yeah, and Larry Fitzgerald's kind of proven that the last couple of years. And so that's low. That's a low ranking for the Cardinals triplets.
Yes, considering who is above them, okay? At number 20, they have Cincinnati's threesome of Andy Dalton, Joe Mixon, and A.J. Green.
Okay, that's a joke.
Okay. At 19, Raiders, Derek Carr, Marshawn Lynch, Amari Cooper. Probably where they should be, although I still think Marshawn Lynch's best days are behind
him. Yeah, so do I.
18, Case Keenum, Devontae Booker, Demaryius Thomas of Denver. Cardinals better than that.
Yes. No doubt about it.
17, Dallas, Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, Allen Hurns. I think the Cowboys are low on this list.
Okay.
If Allen Hurns can get back to where he was at his height in Jacksonville, that's a pretty good threesome. They've got the Seahawks, Russell Wilson, Rashad Penny, Doug Baldwin at number 16. Eagles, Carson Wentz, Jay Ajayi, and Alshon Jeffrey. That's really low for the Eagles,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Mm-hmm.
14 was Green Bay with Rodgers, Montgomery, and Adams. Carolina, 13. New England, 12. Tom Brady, James White, Julian Edelman. The top 10, Tennessee, Kansas City, Houston.
Kansas City with a rookie quarterback.
With a rookie quarterback.
Whom nobody knows can play or not.
And Tyreek Hill listed as their number one receiver. Now, he's a weapon. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, no doubt.
Chargers were 7 with Rivers, Gordon, and Allen. New York Giants, 6 with Manning, Barkley, and Beckham.
That's pretty good.
Vikings, 5. Cousins, Cook, and Thielen. That might be too high. Dalvin Cook's a good player, but he's coming off a devastating injury, too.
No, I agree.
And Kirk Cousins, we don't know how he's going to blend in. Probably well, but still, that might be high for them. Atlanta, 4 with Matt Ryan, Devontae Freeman, Julio Jones.
Hard to beat that.
The Rams at 3, Goff, Gurley, and Brandon Cooks. Number 2, New Orleans, Drew Brees, Alvin Kamara, and Michael Thomas. And they got Pittsburgh at number 1.
Yeah.
Roethlisberger, Bell, and Brown. I don't think there's any debate.
No, there's no debate at number 1 with the Steelers. But there's a lot of triplets on that list that are ranked well above the Cardinals that I think don't belong ahead of them.
And I would agree.
And it's got to be the Sam Bradford factor, because you can't pick holes in Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson, to me.
No, it's all geared all toward Bradford, but that apparently knocks them down the list. The worst triplets, by the way, according to this list. New York Jets.
Yeah.
Josh McCown, Isaiah Crowell, and Robbie Anderson. Man, I'm glad I'm not a Jets fan.
Yeah. No, I know.
Now, that could change, obviously, to Sam Darnold,
mm-hmm.
which gives you a little bit more optimism, but it's still Isaiah Crowell and Robbie Anderson.
Yeah. Yuck. Yuck.
All right, coming up, what's the best way for the D-backs to bust out of their slump? Obviously, it's more cowbell. We'll tell you about it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.